It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. That's some fun.
Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com, as well as the mobile app. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes in multiple ways and interact with us here on the program. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. And as a reminder, you can find the archive of the show and our entire podcast network on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at Giants.com/podcast. So we have entered week two of NFL free agency. We'll go around the league a little bit to discuss how things are shaping up specifically.
And you are still here, by the way, Lance.
Yes, believe it or not. We are still standing and surviving.
I had heard there were a lot of teams after you.
Oh, really? Oh, that's what you were insinuating. Okay.
No? You mean that's only a Twitter rumor?
Apparently, yes. Don't you know you shouldn't read everything you see on the internet and believe it? Lesson learned from that standpoint. But the Giants have been relatively busy, especially based on what we saw in week one. The latest, and remember, this is all according to reports, nothing official with respect to the team, but it does appear, Paul, that they are meeting and talking with veteran defensive lineman A'shaun Robinson. He spent the last three seasons with the Rams. Prior to that, he was with the Lions. And to me, this is part of a theme that we've seen with respect to what the Giants have addressed. And one of the main things that they're addressing is to improve the run defense, Paul, right? They were 27th in the NFL last season. They gave up 144 rushing yards per game. So we see the fact that they brought in Bobby Okereke from the Indianapolis Colts, who was very active for Indy over the course of his rookie contract. They bring in Raheem Nunez-Roches, Nacho, who also was very active in a defensive line rotation for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And now, if you can solidify something with A'shaun Robinson, I mean, just think about what Wink Martindale is going to have at his disposal to try to improve that facet of the team.
You're talking about enhancing depth, and in a very big way, because Robinson is, well, let's just say very similar to Snacks. We're talking about 6'4", at least 330 pounds, probably a little bit more after lunch, okay? and he does provide tremendous run-stopping force on the inside. He will take on a double team. He will plug holes. He is stout, will hold the point of attack. You're not going to get much pass rush out of him. Again, that's why I compare him to Snacks. It's not just in terms of his girth and his size, but similar style of game as to what he brings to the table. Former Alabama Crimson Tide player, right? Roll Tide, the Howard Cross.
That's right.
Little shout out for you, number 87. Back in 2016, was a second round pick of Detroit. What I like about him the most is that he is a rotational player. This is not a guy who has started and played most of the downs. The Giants are specifically looking for rotational linemen. That's why they signed Noches, and that's why, apparently, they are talking to Robinson, because these guys are two rotational players. And I say this all the time. If you just need to go uptown to go to the market, you get a bicycle. You don't shop for a limousine, right? You don't overshoot. And while, you know, these two defensive tackles that we're discussing are not huge names, they fit exactly what the Giants need to fill out the puzzle.
And splash signings don't always lead to wins. So that's why you shouldn't overlook, to your point, some of these. I like to call them complementary signings.
Yes, that's a good word.
Right? You're building depth, as you mentioned. They're maybe not names that jump off the page, but they do a lot of the dirty work. A'shaun Robinson is a guy, you put him in the trenches, you know what you're getting out of him. And as you mentioned, we're talking about a player, over the course of his career, he's around the 50% total snap count on defense, so that's what you can expect. Now, he is coming off a knee injury. He tore his meniscus at the tail end of last season. It cost him the final seven games. But other than that, I mean, this is a guy that's played in double-digit games for the majority of the seasons that he's been in the NFL, and this could be a strong staple to the defensive front. I go back to Spags' defenses, right, when they won the Super Bowl. What was the common element, Paul, that you can attest to? It was the fact that it wasn't one or two guys that had to play 95% of the snaps. Fourth quarter, the guys weren't huffing and puffing, okay? They weren't desperate for Gatorade and water on the sideline. No, I know we chuckle and we laugh, but the bottom line is there's a lot of teams, Paul, They rely on four or five guys up front. If there's any lesson you could take from the Philadelphia Eagles this past season, and I understand they didn't finish the job, they didn't win the Super Bowl, but what Jonathan Gannon, who's now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, the luxury he had was he had 8-9 guys. So he knew, okay, I'm not going to wear these players down. Forget over the course of a season. I'm talking about over the course of a game. I think if Wink can get that luxury for himself, I think that could go very far into, you know, you're going to play maybe your edge guys a lot, but if you could keep those guys fresh on the interior and you can mix and match, it at least presents the offense with some different looks.
Well, I think the key is the Giants believe they have a lot of edge guys who can get the job done between Thibodeau, Ojulari, whether or not, you know, you go into the depth chart and you look at a guy like Ellison Smith, you know, you look at Tamon Fox. They've got guys out there on the edge who they believe can do what they need to do. This was all about beefing up between the tackles so that, A, you could give a rest to guys like Williams and Dexter Lawrence, but B, in a short yardage situation, well, now, if you plug in a 335-pound moose who, to be honest, they tried to do it with Danny Shelton, and he really didn't give them quality snaps. They tried to do it with Jelly Ellis last year. He really didn't give them enough of quality snaps. You know, the depth pieces that they were hoping to use in that role didn't fulfill what they needed. And this is a guy who has done it his whole career and filled that role extremely well. Like I said, he's more of a snacks type of player. And when you consider he also won a championship with the Rams a couple of years ago. So he's been to the postseason three different times and played next to Aaron Donald, you know, for those years when he was with Los Angeles. So there's a lot to like here about this guy.
Dexter Lawrence, just to give you an idea, he played 77% of the defensive snaps, which is not incredibly high, but
at times it seemed like it was more.
Correct. It seemed like he never came off the field. But when he did come off the field,
you noticed
and this is what you were talking about. Oh, yeah. The opposition said, oh, Dexter Lawrence is not manning the middle. We're going to run right up the gut. And I think the Giants noticed that, and that's why that has been a point of emphasis this offseason. The other thing that's impressive about a guy like A'shaun Robinson, and I would say this holds true to Dalvin Tomlinson because it goes back to the players you were naming, right? We were talking about, at least my big emphasis, was the loss of Dalvin should not be overlooked. And it did clearly impact the Giants in certain areas, but there's a lot of things that players like A'shaun Robinson do, Paul, that don't show up in the stat sheet. The point is, if he draws a double and he frees up a one-on-one matchup on the outside, what statistic do you give A'shaun Robinson credit for, right? There's no magical number that appears.
Correct.
But if you watch the film, and the coaching staff certainly will pick up on it, wow, his big frame caused the offensive line to shift its attention to him. They put maybe two guys on him, and now all of a sudden, you get home, or maybe you get a hit on the quarterback, and that leads to a turnover, an incomplete pass. Those are the things that I think you need to highlight when you talk about a player like a Nacho or clearly an A'shaun Robinson, because I go back to the dirty work term. You can't necessarily provide a number, or I don't even know if there's a statistical category that does justice to their play, but he fills that void. He's perfect under that label about giving assists, essentially, to other teammates around him.
So if you consider Robinson as potentially part of this equation with Nacho and Okereke coming in at the linebacker spot.
And re-signing Jared Davis, I would add to that, too.
That's a good point.
He helps
that's
out
a good
as
point.
Well.
So, because he's only here for three games.
Yep.
One regular season game and two playoff games. Think about now what the Giants have done with that bulk and sturdiness in between the tackles for their defense.
Yeah, they've added meat and potatoes, as I like to
say,
right?
They certainly have.
And you want to make it tough on the opposing offensive line and the run game because the Giants are fine. Listen, if a team goes up against them, Paul, they want to run the ball 25 times, great. But if you're only getting 2 to 3 yards per carry, you'll take that. Let them need that high volume of carries to even consider getting in the territory of 85 to 90 yards.
I'll go a step further. What do you want the offense to have to do if you're a Wink Martindale defense? You want to stop them early on with their running plays so that you put them in the precarious situation of having to go such and such and long so that Wink can dial up the blitz. You want them to play into his hands. And how do you do that? By stuffing the run early. That's exactly what this is about.
Well, and it goes back to a player like A'Shaun Robinson. If he cuts down your yardage allowed per carry by a yard or two, you know, I mean, that goes a long way in terms of over the course of the season, Paul. You add that up, the opposition third down territory that they would be facing as a result of that. So maybe this season, I'm just making up a number. Let's say the average third down and distance for an opponent was, let's say, a 3rd and 7. If you could boost that up to a 3rd and 9 and you carry that out over the course of a season, you're going to tell me that's not making a significant difference in terms of not just helping stop your run, but to your point, all of the other layers that are impacted as a result of the stops you're getting at 1st and 2nd down. A guy like A'Shaun Robinson, guy like Nacho, you know, that takes a toll on the opposition. You may not see it in the initial stages, but I guarantee you by the time you get 8-9 weeks into the season, the midway point, you'll notice the drastic difference between what occurred this past season versus what we may see in 2023.
And if you allow Lawrence and Williams to have more gas in their tanks, how much better will they be in terms of their own efficiency? So, and by the way, when you think about it, Robinson and Nacho both have a Super Bowl ring, too.
They do indeed.
Which doesn't hurt the locker room.
No. Well, I would say even if they didn't, I think good character guys that
no
you're not
doubt,
necessarily concerned about.
No doubt, but it's nice to have guys who have won something before, too.
It helps. It doesn't hurt. Well, they at least have bragging rights in the locker room when they walk around and show guys, hey, you want this?
Well, like Tuck used to say to the second Giants Coughlin Super Bowl team before they got that ring. I got a ring. You want one of these? Got a ring. You want one of these? Andre Brown, right?
The song.
I got a ring.
On the plane, yes.
Anyway. Hey, calls a ring. I like this.
They are, indeed. So we will certainly get to the activity. One other thing that I just wanted to touch on in terms of the NFL landscape at large, we're seeing things slow down a bit, Paul, I would say, but there are still a lot of quality veterans out there, and there are still teams that are becoming extremely active in terms of what they're doing. Carolina is a team that comes to mind. They brought in Adam Thielen, according to reports. They already signed Hayden Hurst, tight end of the Bengals, Miles Sanders of the Eagles, and DJ Shark, according to reports, could be the next guy headed to Carolina. So that's a team that has been very active. Chicago, the Bears have shored up a lot on defense as well as offense to give Justin Fields a lot of talent. And the reason why I'm pointing out to this, because Carolina could very well bring in a rookie quarterback, right? Even though they have Andy Dalton. What you're seeing is this is the Philadelphia Eagles blueprint. And the Giants are following the same script. When you have that young quarterback, and Daniel Jones is still a young quarterback,
yes, he is.
Want him to take leaps. In order to truly evaluate him, you want to bring in as much talent as possible. And we saw that Jalen Hurts, from year one to year two in Nick Sirianni and Shane Steichen's system, it was a huge leapfrog. Why? Because they acquired A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith year two, the tight ends, the plethora of running backs. We see what the Giants are doing, acquiring Darren Waller, taking a flyer on Paris Campbell, which is a low-risk, potentially high-reward maneuver. The Bears with Justin Fields, acquiring D.J. Moore, bringing in Robert Tonyan at tight end. We say more often than not, it's a copycat league is my point, Paul. And that's a cliched line. The truth is, there's a lot of validity behind it. You're seeing these teams with young quarterbacks or the potential to bring in a young quarterback. They're following the same exact blueprint.
And I think the other thing that we're seeing too, and you know, it's not exactly new. In fact, it's an age-old blueprint, and that is Philadelphia. Let's face it, they did what they did and turned themselves into a contender because they beefed up both lines. Their defensive line was incredibly deep.
Absolutely.
Their offensive line, at least their starters, were certainly incredibly forceful. And so, you know, football 101 is the trenches. It always starts in the trenches. And I think more and more teams are now understanding that. And when you see the prices that a lot of these linemen on both sides of the ball have gotten over the last couple of years, you understand that. Again, I'm not giving the Eagles credit for that. Maybe they just sparked a little bit more of a tide turn to looking at the lines again. Because I think for a while people may have not necessarily paid quite as much of an emphasis to it. But I think they realized it when they saw what happened with the Bengals a couple years ago. When they saw what happened with the Chiefs over the last couple of years. And what do you see? You know, when you get to the playoffs, it's about the lines. And, you know, Philadelphia obviously didn't get the job done this year. But in my opinion, they lost that Super Bowl more than Kansas City won it. I really think the Eagles coughed and choked up that Super Bowl, and that's their problem. They were built correctly to win it,
yeah,
and they just didn't do it.
And that happens in the NFL. Plus, special teams is something you can't overlook, right? The big return by Kadarius Toney.
Mm-hmm.
What does that have to do with the trenches, right? You're not faulting the construction of their
team.
There
are other factors, but you really help your chances if you build along the line of scrimmage.
Well, and I think that Carolina revamped its offensive line over mm-hmm. the last two seasons. The Bears, they're trying to fine-tune their line. Nate Davis, they brought in from Tennessee, and we know the Giants have brought in some new faces, and they've drafted. So, you know, all of those teams, I'm throwing in the same umbrella because I feel like they're following that plan to say, okay, if we really want to see more out of our young quarterback, let's make sure the house around the quarterback is in order. And Philadelphia, I think, gave us tangible evidence to operate with based on what we saw in 2022. All right, few reminders before we open up the phone lines here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Giants Huddle Podcast, you can head there, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. You can listen on the Giants app or at giants.com/podcast. As we turn the page and look ahead to the 2023 season, Giants fans, take your fandom to the next level with a season ticket membership. Stay connected to the club all year round, not just on game days. Memberships are now available for the 2023 season. To learn more about all the exclusive member benefits, visit giants.com/tickets. Limited inventory is available. And Giants TV, it's the Giants' official connected TV streaming app. Giants TV brings original video content, game highlights on demand, and direct to Big Blue fans. Giants TV, it's free. It's on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, as well as the Giants mobile app. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We're having some streaming issues, but the full show will be posted later today in case you're not able to tune in live as we speak. But it's good to see that individuals are able to dial us up. We'll still have the conversation and the go-around back and forth as we go through the ins and outs of NFL free agency. And let's start off the festivities with DeZane in North Carolina joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, DeZane? What do you got for us?
How you doing?
Doing very well. What's on your mind?
I was on your number, the 1960. This is the same guy. I had the same birthday, 1960. I want to know, after we grab these young men that we grab, do we still grab at number one cornerback?
In the draft or free agency?
In the draft.
Well, this is a deep cornerback class, so depending on how the cards fall in place, remember, the Giants are 25th overall, a lot later than they normally have had an opportunity to select a player, which is good news based on what they did last year, of course. So if there's somebody there who they have good value tied to, yeah, I don't think it's crazy to think that they could address the cornerback position. You've had some injuries in that position. You had some young guys that have been in and out of the lineup. I think, Paul, if they want to bring in somebody who has had a very strong pedigree in college, there's an opportunity to fit them immediately in.
I have said now since I got back from the combine that for me, it would appear right now the Giants are most likely to go for a corner at number 25. There should be value there. I would love to see the kid out of Maryland. To be honest with you, that would be my primary objective if he was there. I don't know if he will be. I think what you have to keep in mind is that Adoree Jackson is got a voidable year at the end of this season on his contract. So Adoree Jackson is not likely to be back in 2024. And when you look at Robinson, Flott, and Rodarius Williams on the other side, all three are coming off of injuries.
Yep.
So yeah. I would think with the quality of depth that you have there, you go for the corner probably at 25, see if he can compete and what he might be able to do. If he can beat out one of those other young corners on one side, great. If he doesn't, then you kind of redshirt him for a year. Maybe he plays a little, maybe he doesn't. And then next year when Adoree Jackson decides he's going to move on with the voidable year, you at least have a first-round caliber corner that you could try out on that side. And then whoever's left amongst those young guys, hopefully they will have gained some more experience and developed, and now you're set for 2024.
It's also possible they may go after a veteran free agent too, depending on how things play out, because I do think there's room for a little bit more experience. The players you threw out, yes, they have some injury baggage, but also not a lot of opportunities on the field too. You know, Aaron Robinson was a third round pick in 2021. Cordell Flott was a third round pick last year. Re'Darius Williams was a sixth rounder in 2021. You don't have, once again, overwhelming experience on this roster. If they want to bring in a seasoned vet, I think there's room for them to do that as
well. If they do that, though, Lance, I think it'll be at a minimum, like when they brought in Fabian Moreau last year.
Yeah.
It'll be on a minimum one-year deal.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about, like, right before training camp or something like that. Yeah,
the reason, the rationale for me to potentially draft one at 25 is because that guy could be part of your future.
100%. No, I am completely with you. I'm just saying that in addition to potentially drafting somebody at 25, I still think there's room for a Leon Hall type of player, too, if you remember. He came in several years ago in 2016, right before training camp started. That type of player is what I'm looking at.
Okay, and I was thinking about, say, did we get a real defense end, a real one, come off the bench or something?
You're talking about a rotational edge rusher?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible they could go after a veteran, but I also think that, you know, they want to get these young guys more of an opportunity. I mean, for example, an Ellerson Smith, who, Paul, you brought up earlier. I think you want to get him more experience on the field.
Fox, too.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if you want to bury those guys as opposed to some of the corners, because the corners have had injury issues. Like, Tamon Fox has been healthy. He played last season.
Ellison flashes, Smith, too.
Correct. So I think you want to maybe take the step forward in developing those younger guys, DeZane, as opposed to having a seasoned vet take away chances from them.
And you have Ward, your veteran, who is back again. Okay, to help with the run-stopping downs. But you've got four potential pass-rushing down edge rushers between Ojulari and Thibodeau and Fox and Ellerson Smith. So to be frank, I don't know that you need to touch that at all. I think what they're doing by adding Nacho and potentially Robinson, they're trying to take care of the between-the-tackles defensive line. That's what they're trying to reinforce. And I'm with them. I understand. Why would I add an edge rusher? I think the Giants, they got enough depth there.
Yeah, I think Jahad Ward answers that call. And appreciate the phone call, DeZane. Thanks for giving us a ring. Ward, you brought him back because of the impact he made, not just wreaking havoc against the quarterback, but setting the edge, right, in terms of stopping the run.
Mm-hmm.
They saw immense amount of value in him. Good locker room presence. Wink loves him. That's been well documented. So if you're saying, well, you need a seasoned rotational vet, I think you already have him on the roster.
Now, I will say this. Regarding the 25, if Deontay Banks, who ran a 4.35, which really helped his cause a lot, winds up pushing him high to where the Giants can't get him at 25, that's the guy I really want, okay? If they can't come up with a corner that they really like for all the reasons we stated, you could certainly make a case for them if one of those top three receivers drops down to 25. You could still make a case for that. You could also make a case if they really believe that Schmitz, the Minnesota Gophers center, is the real thing. You could make a case at 25. That's not too high to take a guy if you believe he's going to be a foundational center for years to come.
Yeah, I'm with you with wide receiver, and I've said this multiple times. There are wide receivers that have been taken early and later in the draft over the last few years. They've made an immediate impact. Plus, you have to take into consideration, Paul, focusing on wide receiver, some of the moves the Giants have made this offseason were not necessarily long-term commitments to these wide receivers.
Right.
So you got to think a little bit beyond 2023 in terms of who the core is that is going to be here. And the way to solidify that and not have to go every single year and answer the same question, who do we have on our depth chart that now we can build upon and move forward, you draft a guy. So first, second round wide receiver, that to me is not out of the question at all. And I actually think it makes a lot of sense even in the wake of some of the moves they made.
Yeah, I have been on record since the combine talking about Tillman out of Tennessee, potentially at 57. But there were those at the combine who don't think he will last that long.
Well, that's why it's hard to speculate at 25.
It really is.
It's far more difficult than when we're talking about 7 or 8 or something like
that.
Don't
you find, now, the last several years, because the Giants have had such a poor record and they picked in the top 10, and then last year they had 2 top 10 picks. I mean, it's a total different dynamic. Our conversations with the fans and even each other when we're off the air have taken a totally different slant. Because in reality, you kind of know, let's say, 12 guys. I think it's fair to say 12 to 15 guys. You pretty much can say 10 of those 12 to 15 are going to be in the top 10. Right? Is that fair?
That's fair.
There may be a little give and take there, but you pretty much know, right? So we would all sit there and say, all right, if the top 10 picks are going to come from these 15 players, And we know the Giants have significant needs at this spot, this spot, and this spot. And there are players at those spots who are going to be in that top 15. Well, let's face it. Our conversation pretty much centered around those kinds of guys. And we did a lot of research on those guys because we pretty much felt, all right, it's probably going to be him or him. Maybe there was a third possibility in there. But picking at 25, Lance,
it's off the charts.
You got a better chance, honestly, of driving down the New Jersey Turnpike and finding a $50 bill along the side of the road. Right?
So many variables. Yeah.
So our conversations take on a totally different climate because we can't, for the life of us, imagine, A, who's going to be there, and B, where the Giants feel with the potential best athlete available plan as to what position they might wind up finding.
Well, that's why I think the conversation this year, and I would say even when they're picking in the top 10, if you focus on after free agency, where you think maybe there's a need and where value may match up with that need, I think the three that we hit on, wide receiver, cornerback, and center, I think all three of those positions are all in the conversation
based
on what we've seen in the early stages of free agency. That, to me, is the best conversation to have as opposed to, oh, 25, they got to take so-and-so. And then when he's off the board at 20, you're going to say to yourself, you wasted months and months upon speculation, and the guy wasn't even accessible to the Giants.
Well, it was like last year, right, when we knew Ekwonu. I wanted him as my top offensive lineman, and I wanted Thibodeau as my top pass rusher. Those are the two guys I was begging for in the top 10. But once Ekwonu came off the board, Evan Neal was my second guy because we knew that was possible, right? We knew who the top tackles are, who the top pass rushers are. So you just put them in order. You say, okay, if they don't get that guy, they're going to get that guy because you're in the top 10, right? That's easy. That's easy. At 25? Forget about it.
And there's always going to be somebody that falls that you probably never expected to.
No doubt.
I mean, for example, Jalen Carter. I think right now he's a bit of a wild card. Does he go as high as people think? Do the off-the-field issues scare people? There's a lot of talk. I mean, he may be somebody that could go where everybody projected and there's no questions, no issues, or all of a sudden he falls down a little bit and then what happens as a result, Paul, somebody else moves up, right?
Sure.
Because he's still on the board. You could have one of those scenarios. It tends to happen every single year. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Let's check in with Doug in Glen Falls joining us here on BBKL. What's happening, Glenn? Oh, what's happening, Doug? Excuse me. What do you got?
Hi. Well,
hi.
You guys didn't post it. Can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear. Yep.
I think it's called Quarterback Country. It showed a video of Danny Dimes.
Yes.
Practice and all the passes he was throwing
yes.
were over 25 yards. They weren't 10 to 15 yards.
Rapid-fire quick throws in that video. Yes.
Yeah. And so anybody questions his workout ethic or whatever, and he doesn't deserve that money.
I don't think anybody. Yeah, Doug, who's been questioning his work ethic? I don't think anybody has been questioning his work ethic. Whether or not there's questions about the longevity, that's a different story. I don't think the conversation has ever surrounded work ethic.
Anyways, I hope they do get one of those linemen because that's where they're going to be coming up the middle. They need a starting caliber center to take Feliciano's place.
Well, I mean, assuming they don't bring him back, too. Remember, Feliciano's still a free agent, so it's possible they re-sign him.
Right, but they need something bigger than him.
Well, and that's why we were talking about the draft could be a realistic target or perhaps somebody else in free agency. There's no doubt about it. That position, there's a question mark because the two guys you used in Nick Gates, he went to Washington, and John Feliciano's still on the market. So no dispute there. That's still a position they absolutely have to address, whether it be bringing back an internal candidate or going into the draft pool.
I do like Joe Tippmann if you wind up going further down the line. He is 6'6".
From Wisconsin?
Yeah. But at 6'6", there will be some questions about pad level because you usually don't see 6'6" centers in this league. But that would be a guy that I do kind of like him. I'm not going to lie. I do kind of like him. I think Schmitz is the best center of this draft. I think most people believe that. But Tippmann is a good guy down the road if you don't take one in the first round.
All right, Doug. Appreciate the phone call. You got it.
One thing to keep in mind, Lance, even if the Giants wind up let's say, status quo and Feliciano resigns, the thinking is going to be that Neal will be better in his second season at right tackle. You know what Glowinski is. He's what he is, and he's fine. You know that Thomas has already shown tremendous improvement to the point where he was on the All-Pro team this past year. And you believe that at left guard, with the competition that you'll have with Azudu, with Bredesen, with Lemieux, with probably McKeithen, okay, who was hurt last year on injury reserve, between those four guys, and again, maybe Wyatt Davis is in that competition, you know.
Who they just re-signed.
Right. I mean, you've got so much competition at left guard, you probably will have a steady and consistent improved player in that spot. So even if Feliciano does wind up coming back and winds up being the starter, the line as a whole should be better.
Well, because you're talking about the pieces around him.
Correct.
Yeah, and the fact that you're also growing a group together, too.
No doubt.
I think that's key.
No doubt.
All the players you mentioned have been drafted within the last 3 years. And you like that because that adds continuity to the conversation. But as we've seen with offensive lines, Paul, all it takes is one guy who doesn't do his job. And then
we can
sit here and talk all about the continuity and all about the youth movement. All it takes is one issue. So I'm with you there. But I do think what's important for the Giants, and maybe this is why drafting somebody could be attractive, how many years do you want to, Paul, have that revolving door? You know, just like you said with quarterback.
Sure.
A new center every single year. I think it gets to a point where you want to feel your guards and your center have time together with one another.
Yeah, the placeholder at center is not exactly the best case scenario. But the point that I'm simply making is that the sum of the parts should be improved as an offensive line one way or the other. Now, if they can upgrade the center to the point where they get a guy in there who they want to plug in and say, look, that is your job for several years to come, that would be better. I don't think there's any doubt. I think we would all agree.
And for Daniel's sake, too, by the way.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the ideal game plan. But, you know, the other thing that we've thrown out on this show, I just wonder, because Josh Azudu did get some snaps during practice.
Mm-hmm.
Do they take him a step
further? So did Bredesen.
Correct. But Azudu, and Bredesen's not an old man, but Azudu was somebody you drafted, unlike mm-hmm. Bredesen. I guess long-term investment, you obviously saw potential in him. Do you toy with the idea of maybe giving him a shot? Because you could play Bredesen at guard.
Look, I also wonder if the experiment with Shane Lemieux potentially taking snaps at center, I wonder if that is now off the board. Or could he potentially do that? I think the guard competition, they're going to have so many guys, at least five guys, at left guard fighting for that starting job. It's not unthinkable to think that one of those guys may wind up being in the center competition. I would prefer that wasn't the case. I'd like to believe they just have an answer and say, this is this guy's job. But if it has to be, at least they've got bodies.
I would say as it stands right now, and that's not saying much given rosters change all the time, but if the roster stays like this leading up to the draft, so we're going to see some spring workouts, I would think Bredesen and Azudu are the strongest candidates to assume the center position. As it stands right now, Paul,
mm-hmm.
is that fair? Would you agree with that?
I agree.
That those two would be the clubhouse leaders.
And I'm forgetting that other offensive lineman.
Jack Anderson?
Not Jack Anderson. He's also a guard, but there's another offensive lineman, too, that I'm also forgetting.
What position, though? Because I have the list in front of me.
Solomon Kindly.
Okay.
Another younger offensive lineman, third-year pro, came out
undrafted
of Georgia.
Last year. Yep.
Right. Came out of Georgia. And, you know, again, we're talking about 6'4", 340 pounds. He is a mountain of a guy. And he's in that competition, too. And they signed him to a reserve contract, and they brought him back. Well, they didn't bring him back for no reason. He's back. So really, well, if you throw Anderson and Kindly in the mix, what is that, seven possible guards?
Oh, you got volume. Yeah.
So there is volume there.
You just don't have a wealth of center experience.
No, you do not.
That's what I'm saying. So,
and I'm not saying Kindly
no,
is a center.
I'm not interpreting
he's a guard.
That. Yes,
he's a guard.
I'm not interpreting that. It's just you like to say you have somebody on the roster. For example, when Feliciano and Gates were on the roster, yeah, it was a little bit of a guessing game. But at the same time, you knew, okay, these guys have tangible evidence of getting snaps at center. Now the field is wide open because it's more of, okay, he's got the potential to play there, but we haven't necessarily seen a lot of it during games. We've only seen it maybe during practice. And when I say practice, even going back to their college days. So it definitely changes the conversation. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Cliff in New York with us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Cliff? What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
Hi.
I appreciate the encouragement about the offensive line that you just said. Looking at the whole thing, I've been feeling like it's reminding me a lot about last year, where we're fighting like heck to really be competitive, and this year it's to stay competitive against what looks like a tougher schedule. And so I love the moves. I think there's a good reason to think we can hang in there at least, but really to take the next step, like you've been saying and teaching us. Everybody knows that it's the trenches that count, and it's really hard to make dramatic leaps forward in the trenches in a short period of time from my training as a fan, you know. And that's why these wild cards that we've got from last year's draft with McKeithen on OL and Davidson on DL, I mean, I would love to know that these guys are going to get some snaps and be productive, and how long is it going to take for them to have impact. So I'm feeling good, but the experience that they already have, I know that we're going to fight like heck. We've got the coaching to make do with what we've got. But the question I had when you were talking about the corners, I've been thinking it would be nice to get an elite corner if there's so many of them. But when you guys were looking at the candidates in the draft, were you able to factor in what you think Wink Martindale is looking for? Because I'm concerned that it's got to be a guy that he wants.
Well, sure. I don't think anybody would disagree. Joe Shane's not going to pick a guy unless he feels Wink is high on him and he's a good fit for the system. When you say elite corner, though, are you talking about potentially you wanted to see them go after somebody in free agency first? Is that what you're referring to?
No, I think if it's deep in corners, I'm looking to get really good corners in the draft because, like you were saying, we don't not even counting on having a Dory for very long. So we really need to. It's a position that needs to be built up, and if we can get a really milestone person for that position, I'd love to see it. I was just concerned that at 25. It's, how many corners have to be off the board before we say, you know, it's just not a place to get a corner anymore, right? And that would be very disappointing.
Here's the good news, all right? The bulk of the corners in this draft are 6 feet and taller. We know Wink likes taller, longer-length corners who play press coverage and are physical against the run and can come on the corner blitz if necessary. Now, you're going to say to me, well, what coordinator wouldn't want those kinds of guys? Well, no. There are some coordinators who are very happy playing a cover three, right, and playing zone, playing off coverage, who want more speed, more twitchiness, want more ball skills, want guys who are going to be able to go down into the slot and cover a nifty wide receiver. It depends on, A, what you like, and, B, what you need. The good news is the style that Wink Martindale likes and what he could probably use is fruitful in this draft. There are plenty of 6-foot boundary corners in this draft who will play physical and will play press coverage.
Great, great. Well, that's very encouraging. So I'm looking for that position as the biggest need. Now, I didn't hear what kind of a draft it is for centers. You mentioned one guy.
Not good.
And he's not likely to be there at 25?
Right. Well, he may. He may. There's certainly a chance that Schmitz is there at 25. But most people think he will go late first round. So he's going to be probably in that neighborhood. The question becomes, how highly do you rank him? He's by far consensus the best center in this draft. But, there are some people who probably think he's an early second-round pick, and he's not worthy of a first-round draft choice. It's going to depend on your flavor or your taste for him. I shouldn't say flavor. Your taste for him. If you think he's a legit first-round guy, then 25 is a fine value. If you believe he's a second-round guy, then you can't take him at 25.
Yeah, because that would be a reach under the circumstances, especially if there's somebody higher on your board at another position where you could use a boost.
But I think most people, especially after being at the combine it was quite clear that there's separation after him at the center spot. He is by far the best center in this draft. And then there's a gap.
I mean, most of the centers are projected to go in the 2 to 3 round territory. That's what it looks like based on where the projections are. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody won't skyrocket and maybe a team is enamored with a player and they want to take them late in the first round. But the highest ranking center, and he's one of them, they're all in that 2 to 3 round category is where they're projected to go. But remember, well, still very early on.
Well, traditionally, anybody on the offensive line, they've always said, I think Joe Shane said this when he first took over also, which we had heard before, you can find good offensive linemen in the later rounds. So,
well, you could say that about any position if you do your homework, right?
Exactly.
I mean, teach their own, right? Yeah.
Well, I thought it was especially about those guys because the glittering attractions in the early rounds were usually not the offensive linemen, and
right.
The coaches didn't care because they knew they could get good ones further down. So I don't know, man. When these guys came in, it was like, well, if there's anybody that's going to be able to find those people further down in the draft, it's going to be our guys that we have now. And we really weren't too shabby, I didn't think, in the personnel department before, since we know that there's people left over from the previous regime, you know, that are still blue chips as far as we're concerned. For us, I don't know, man. It's encouraging to hear that we've got all these good players. But what I'm seeing is really intense competition in camp, even greater than last year. And maybe we really take the leap forward this year in depth, and that's where we see it. And if that's true, then it's going to be visible on special teams,
yeah,
which would be wonderful.
No doubt.
And also on the defensive front, which I think is key too, and appreciate the phone call, Cliff. When you look at the defensive line specifically, which is what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, DJ Davidson is another guy that we didn't bring into the conversation, Paul. So he's a guy that was hurt last year.
Blew out his knee.
Bring him back.
And I talked about him earlier during the offseason, but it seems to me that by signing Nacho and potentially bringing in Robinson, that's telling me that either Davidson is not necessarily the primary answer in that rotation because you're looking at two veterans jumping him on the depth chart, or maybe perhaps the injury situation is a little too questionable for them to count on him.
And it could be either of the two. But remember, we don't know what their logic is and their thinking is and how many guys they want to keep on the active roster. You know, maybe that's a position this year because of the run struggles they feel justifies having an extra body. And
could be.
Once again, I don't want to speculate because we don't know how roster is going to pan out, but is it possible that Davidson could pass through waivers and get back to the practice squad?
It was
not crazy.
It was suggested to me that when they took him last year, they thought long-term, he's a very strong guy for his size.
Yeah.
They really like his power in the interior to stop the run.
Well, that's what he was known for at Arizona State.
Now, I was also told that he was raw and that last year kind of would have been a redshirt year for him anyway, but then he went and got hurt in limited action, and that was the end of it. He had to go to injured reserve. So maybe, potentially, this could not also, as a possibility, maybe it has nothing to do with his future with this team, because maybe these veterans that they're talking about are guys that are only stopgaps, you know, to the point where they're bridge guys, and maybe Davidson over the long term is somebody that they have a future for anyway.
Well, and that was the same philosophy, Paul, that I was talking about at wide receiver. For example, you bring in a Paris Campbell on a short-term deal, that doesn't mean that he's in your long-term plan.
Right.
So the need to develop another younger wide receiver is still there. It's the same philosophy with respect to the defensive line. Yeah, in the short term, Nacho may leapfrog DJ Davidson, but that doesn't mean that Davidson
right.
doesn't appear in 2024.
Correct.
Perhaps,
correct.
When he gets more experience under his belt.
And he
gets
lost
his
so
footing.
Much time last year as a rookie that yep. it's kind of a wasted year for him.
Plus, also, I'm just doing the math here, Paul. It's not crazy to think, even if, once again, you assign those two veteran spots ahead of him on the depth chart, those two, Dexter Lawrence, Leonard Williams, Davidson's number 5. You could keep 5 interior defensive linemen. Right?
Absolutely, you
so,
could.
You know, even with him having some question marks about health, I would still say mathematically he's got a good shot. Assuming everything goes according to plan. Because the other guys, I'm not including in the interior defensive lineman conversation. I'm including them with respect to edges. Jahad Ward, Tamon Fox, Kayvon Thibodeau, Azeez Ojulari, Ellerson mm-hmm. Smith. They're not interior. lineman, and then everybody else is a linebacker. So the numbers game doesn't necessarily keep him on the outside looking in, despite the fact that he has some challenges that he has to overcome. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Brian in New York joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Brian? What do you got?
Hello. Hi, guys. I appreciate the all the honesty you give us every day. You tell us what we need to hear, not what we want to hear.
Well, we appreciate you tuning in.
Thank you so much for your time and interest.
My question is about Saquon. It's kind of a two-parter. The question is, have discussions about his contract, have they been tabled, or are they still working on it? Do you think he'll be signed before June, I think, was the deadline?
July. July 15th is the deadline.
July. Okay.
Well,
second part.
Yeah, go ahead. Ask your second question, and then we'll converse on that.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Do you think since this running back class in the draft is so deep, depending on who they pick, like your Jahmyr Gibbs or your Zach Charbonnet, one of those guys, if the Giants pick them up, is that indicative of whether they're going to re-sign Saquon next year?
Okay, well, we appreciate the questions, Brian. We'll now answer them with you off the air. With respect to Saquon, I think that the level of urgency right now, and this is just my own personal opinion, Paul, is maybe not overwhelming because you have until July 15th to work out a deal. I also think it's highly unlikely that any team will offer or think about two first-round picks, so I don't think there's the worry that somebody's really going to provide competition. So those two things, I think, help the cause. And I think if you look at trends and track record, most players that are given the franchise tag, it takes deadlines to get deals done, is the old phrase. So could something happen before July 15th? Absolutely. But more often than not, if you're going to get a long-term deal done with a franchise tag player, tends to come close to that deadline.
You know, the thing with Saquon is this. He may decide that he's already accepted in his own mind that either A, he'll settle for the long-term deal and be happy with that, but the timing isn't right for him. He may even have in his own mind think he's going to play for the tag and decided, you know what? I'm not going to sign it till I have to, and I'll come in, and I'm going to miss the spring workouts, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm going to prep on my own, and I don't want to be beholden to all of the workouts. I'll take care of myself and then come in when I want to come in at the end. That could happen, too, because I don't think the Giants will pull the tag back. I really don't.
I
think they're keeping it on him. I think there's a possibility, a strong possibility, that they draft a running back at some point after the third round. Whether or not it's in the third itself, I'm not so sure. I think it's more likely in the fourth, maybe even the fifth. I could see them doing that. I remember some years ago, I talked about how I loved Kenneth Gainwell coming out of school. And I said, hey, you know what? This guy could be a third or fourth round pick, and he's going to really help somebody. Well, right now, are the Eagles happy they drafted Kenneth Gainwell? I think they are.
Absolutely.
You know, Miles Sanders now got shoved to the side because of the money situation. So, you know, there are backs to be had, and I think you're talking about the Giants drafting a rookie running back this year as a developmental guy who may wind up playing some as early as 2024, maybe, or maybe even 2025. But there'll be no rush to get that guy on the field. That running back that they draft, in my opinion, Lance, whether it's fourth or fifth round, is going to be a redshirt guy this year, in all likelihood. Okay? That's what I think. And I would add one other small item here. They brought Breida back as veteran insurance for Barkley this year because they wanted a pro in the room, you know, in case they need him. But they still have Brightwell, who has shown flashes. And there's another guy on this team named Jayshon Corbin out of Florida State.
Undrafted last year.
Who was on the practice squad and had a terrific training camp. I'm curious. I don't know this. Now, he was undrafted last year, but I think the Giants really liked what they saw in him. What they'll have to decide as they move forward in the draft and they think about that developmental running back they'd kind of like to keep to the side, when they're up on the board, do they think that fourth-round running back that they can take is better than Jayshon Corbin? Because if they think Corbin's better or has more potential, they're better off just keeping him and then using that draft pick on something else.
Also, maybe Brightwell and the future of him, I think, adds into the conversation. Brightwell was a sixth-round pick in 2021. Mm-hmm. He's entering year three. Remember, you don't get the fifth-year option on a sixth-round pick. So he will be entering the final year of his rookie contract at this time next year. The fact that, you know, he's not on the books forever, does that maybe change their philosophy that they want another running back to develop? I think him and Corbin combined would help answer that question. But I'm with you.
It's an interesting thing to talk about because they've got to calculate the potential of both players.
Yeah, but as the running back depth chart is constructed currently, I don't think there is an overwhelming need to bring in somebody who's going to play immediately, which is where you were getting at.
Correct.
And that doesn't change for me whether Saquon gets a long-term deal or plays
absolutely
on the tag. Because Saquon, Matt Breida, Gary Brightwell, maybe Corbin, three of those four guys are going to be here this season. I think with confidence,
yes,
we can say that.
But maybe not in 24.
No, but those three guys also know the offense. I'm operating more of this coming year. This coming year, meaning the philosophy is you like a guy, okay, draft him. You could develop him. But you don't.
He's a futures pick is what he is.
100%. You don't need to love a guy or be infatuated with him because you need to get him on the field immediately.
Right.
That's the difference. Now, with respect to Saquon, I think you brought up an interesting point, Paul, about Barkley's mindset. You know, we're looking at it from the Giants' mindset. You give a guy a tag, ideally you'd like to work out some type of a deal so that you have him on the books and you know what you're operating. But does Saquon say to himself, I'm okay playing with the tag and then giving myself an opportunity to maybe test the market again if I can have another good year? Now, if I'm Saquon, my personal opinion, I'd want the security.
Given so would I.
The injury history, I'd want to know, okay, I'm on the books for maybe 2 to 3 years. I would like that. But hey, Barkley, he doesn't have to operate like that. He doesn't have to subscribe to that philosophy. But it's just, it's interesting. Does he come to grips with the fact, okay, they tagged me, they worked out a long-term deal with Daniel, maybe I bet on myself again. And I say, I'm going to play on the tag, and maybe my value even increases. It's possible he's having those conversations with his representatives. It's also possible that he's looking at it from our standpoint, where there's urgency for him by the time the summer rolls along to get something done, because he doesn't want to risk, God forbid, getting hurt again. There's arguments easily on both sides.
The one thing he must keep in mind, though, if he does want to play on the one-year tag, is that the Giants could tag him again next year.
That's true. Yep.
And so he doesn't necessarily have complete freedom by doing that.
Though the number does go up a little
bit. It goes up probably to about $12 million. That's the estimate.
Yep.
And quite honestly, if he has another Pro Bowl caliber season, I think you could make a case that he'd be worth 12.
And you could digest the $12 million.
Sure you could.
Because that's very manageable.
So I think the Giants are really in the driver's seat with him. In fact, almost lockdown driver's seat. That's how I see it. But hey, however he wants to play it, I think it's okay. The Giants figure he's going to be here one way or the other this year anyway. Yeah. It's going to be Saquon Barkley running the rock in week one.
And the other thing that I wanted to add was you were talking about, you know, maybe not being here for the spring or waiting till training camp because that's been a trend for guys on the tag.
Guys like to do that.
But the way the tag works, just so that everybody understands, it's fully guaranteed money once they sign the contract.
Correct.
Okay, then it becomes fully guaranteed. And that means that no matter what happens, Saquon's getting his money. That's number one. But number two, here's the other thing that's interesting, Paul, especially when we entertain, and we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but holdouts. Well, because it's interesting because it's connected. Once a player signs the tag, he can no longer hold out. The point is it's a trade-off,
correct,
Paul.
You and, must come in.
And but I think this gets lost in the conversation. The minute the player signs the tag, you're then committing to the fully guaranteed money, but you're also telling the team, oh, I'm going to be at practice the next day. Okay?
Correct.
You can't sign the tag and say, no, you know what? I'm going to go to the beach.
Well, you're subjected to discipline.
100%.
Mainly fines.
No, but the reason why I say that, and yes, you wind up losing money in the long run, is that they come to grips with the fact, okay, I'm signing the tag, and now I'm once again becoming a participant of the team.
Correct.
That's important. So that's what Saquon is looking at in terms of his decision-making process. But I think as Paul and I outlined, you could understand if he's saying to himself, I want to bet on myself. And then you could also understand the injury fear of him wanting security. Because here's the other thing slightly connected to that, Paul. If you said, okay, they could tag him again, but he says to himself, all right, even if the tag goes up to $12 million, if that's what the ballpark average annual salary would be, he would say, okay, maybe I don't have merely much to lose because I'd be getting on the tag what maybe around the average annual salary would be. Just some food for thought. It's just, there's many layers to this. And there's many different parties that have different perspectives.
I think we would all agree it's better for everybody the sooner he gets here and continues to work with his teammates and continues to develop
absolutely
everything that the Giants offense and this team is trying to do as they take a step forward. I'm sure that everybody would agree that's the best overall plan.
100%. Brian Daboll, Mike Kafka, you want to build on where you left off last season. And even though Saquon's a veteran and could catch on quickly.
And no one is doubting his work ethic, by the way.
No,
let me make that clear. I'm not concerned about him being here because he might dog it if he's away from the facility. I don't think anybody in their right mind would ever accuse Saquon Barkley of not busting his butt to be in the best shape possible, because he will be prepared. After what he had to go through with those injuries over 2.5 seasons to come back like he did this past year, oh no, he will be loaded for bear by the time he comes in, whenever that is.
Yeah, don't lose sleep over his calves shrinking over the course of this offseason.
No.
I think it's fair to say they'll be in relatively good shape, whether he's here or not, in terms of the long-term offseason program. All right, that is going to wrap up things for us here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. If you missed any of the current program, you can see the entirety on Giants.com, the mobile app, as well as on our YouTube channel. And we appreciate everybody for tuning in, because this program, Big Blue Kickoff Live, is part of the Giants platforms everywhere and Giants.com/podcast. We'll be back up and running again on Tuesday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Will we be live via the stream? That is the tease for tomorrow's program. Tune in and you will find out whether or not we will be up and about at 12:30 p.m. Eastern live, but I guarantee you there will be a program. That's the assurance. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest. We're signing off here. Have a good one.